Hey, Lucinda, how are you?
Ça va bien. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. How was your weekend?
Great weekend. It was one of those weekends where I felt like I lived 15 lives only on Friday. But let's talk about your weekend first.
Okay. It started on Thursday. We had the Red Rose Farm Philadelphia Ballet benefit event. It was absolutely incredible. It was a packed house. We had great weather, a little cold at the end, and so the dew on the stage prevented the last performance from happening. It was a lot of pointe shoes at the end, so they had to nix it. It's okay. They'll do it again. We'll see it again. Mm-hmm. But overall, crowd was absolutely amazing. Meeting Point by Zay Chen again.
That's the one we saw at the PMA as a preview, right?
As a preview. They got better and better. They are such a dynamic group together, and the entire place just feels the movement. It's such a powerful piece every time that we see it. And then they had to move the Saturday performance because of the rain, and they moved it to Sunday. And I believe Sunday went off without a hitch.
Did you get into anything else this weekend?
Had a great birthday party this weekend that we celebrated. And other than that, hung out in the garden.
I love your garden.
It was nice.
Like I said, I had one of those weekends where it was just nonstop. So starting on Friday, Petit Garçon and I, we went jogging early morning. And then I went into the office for an hour. And then I went to his pre-K graduation.
Oh, adorable.
I cried.
Nice.
I was not the only one. Went back to the office. Then I went to meet my husband for lunch at Oyster House. And then I went back to the office. And then I caught a ride to the performance garage.
Oh, yeah.
With my husband, but not before picking up Petit Garçon. Again, he had a busy weekend, too. It was his dance rehearsal. Yeah, tech and dress rehearsal.
Nice.
And then I returned home for a nap. And then I went out to see the Kooks that night.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was so rainy that night, like you said.
Yes.
Walked out of the Fillmore to almost, I mean, it downpoured at a moment, but it lightened up. And then I ended up walking because my lifts were getting canceled left and right. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get through there. It wasn't the parking lot that I heard that 76 was that night.
Yes.
I ended up walking from the Fillmore to 3rd and Brown. Do you remember where I used to live?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Around there. Got picked up by my Lyft there. And then I ordered McDonald's on the ride home.
John would have been so proud.
It's my new, like, guilty pleasure.
Yes.
And then on Saturday, late morning, it was my son's dance recital. We left that. We had lunch. We stopped at a playground. And then here's the most glorious thing. 3-hour nap by all 4 members of my family.
Perfect.
Concert, dance recital. Oh my God, a pre-K graduation.
Onto the conversation.
Onto the conversation.
This is Robert Marsh, and you're listening to Philly Has Heart podcast. In this podcast, we sit down with artists, gallerists, educators, curators, and other creatives who comprise the Philadelphia art world to discuss upcoming performances, exhibits, and other events and initiatives that are not to be missed. The art scene in Philadelphia is so rich that it can seem daunting. Consider this your weekend cultural recommendation. With me always is my producer, Lucinda Degerland.
Hey, hey.
And today we have with us Kara Mashinda, Fellowship Director of Da Vinci Art Alliance, and Tanya Latortu, Project and Knowledge Management Professional, Independent Cultural Producer, Amateur Photographer, Serial Hobbyist, Small Business Owner, and Turtleneck Enthusiast. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
This is awesome.
You had me at Turtleneck Enthusiast.
I'm sorry to have one on today. It was a little warm.
I learned so much about you in that.
I hope I didn't disappoint.
So we wanted to start with your origin stories, right? Can you take us through your journeys, and we'll start with you, Kara, on how it brought you to Da Vinci Art Alliance?
Yes. So my first experience with Da Vinci Art Alliance was actually as an exhibiting artist. I was a member of a collage collective called Philadelphia Collage Works. They're still in operation, or still, you know, organizing and together. So from 2019 to 2021, I was a member. And we had, wow, this is, it's all coming back.
Yes.
We had a show in June, and it was Pride Month. Oh. The theme was rainbow. I gave a little talk about what the Pride colors stand for. And also at that time, they had recently added in 2017, the black and the brown stripes to Philadelphia's LGBTQ flag.
Yeah.
And so I talked a little bit about that. I can't remember how many members there were, like at least 15. And we all contributed maybe two or three small works. It was one of the largest shows that Da Vinci Art Alliance did. And so that's my first experience. I'm a member of Tiger Strikes Asteroid. It's an artist-run gallery that has five sites across the United States. And so the founding one was here in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
We have a gallery space at the Crane Arts Building. Working with, in that collective, I'm actually co-director now, but at the time, I was working with, you know, other artists, and Da Vinci had reached out to her. Mary Henderson is her name, was a fellow artist and member of TSA, and they wanted to start a residency program. And so Mary was like, hey, you know, Da Vinci Art Alliance, you know, what's your experience? I was like, oh, I only had this one experience and it was good. They're like, yeah, well, they want to start a residency program, and I'm going to do the residency part, but they also need a fellowship director. And so she invited me.
Oh,
and I spoke at the time with Sam Connors and Bryant Gersh, who was the co-director at the time. And I was able to come on as fellowship director. And just this year, I took over the residency as well, in terms of adding guidance for the residents and things like that.
Wow.
So that's my story of how I came to Da Vinci Art Alliance. And we might talk about how I came into Tanya's orbit.
Yes.
But like, it was also through Da Vinci Art Alliance, of course. It was actually by happenstance, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can use that as my origin story.
Yeah, please.
No, that'd be great.
So, of Black Womanhood, I like the word origin that you use, because that's why I like renamed the project of Black Womanhood, like of, from, like it, there's a lot of like origin behind the word in terms of like its meaning. So anyway, I started working on that project in 2019 One of my girlfriends, she had hosted a supper club. She used to do these supper clubs all the time with like her friends in Brooklyn, and this one was themed Black Womanhood. So she invited me, and this was like right after we had met, and I was like, okay, what is this about? And I hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about my womanhood, and no one ever heard that word before. And so I think most people who were there were either going through fertility treatments or thinking about fertility, so it was a fertility heavy conversation. But as someone who didn't really want to have children or didn't really think about it, I had to meditate on like what I wanted to bring to the conversation. So I have endometriosis, and if you don't know what endometriosis is, it's a condition in which the lining of your uterus thickens abnormally, and you can also have other extrauterine growths, which can cause severe pain, it can cause infertility, it can cause cyst growth, like a lot of different things can happen. It's a very, very unpleasant experience, and it's diagnosed through a laparoscopic surgery, which I had in my early 20s. So I thought about like my period story and how my whole life has kind of revolved around how miserable it was. And that's what I discussed. And just being in a space where people spoke so vulnerably about just their womanhood inspired me to do something. I do have a background in public health, but at the time, and most recently, I was working as a regulatory project manager at a law firm. So it was not at all connected to this, but I wanted a creative outlet. So I asked my friend, I was like, is it okay if I use this theme for a project? I don't know what I want to do yet, but the end goal would be some type of art exhibit. And she was like, sure. So then a pandemic happened and other stuff happened, and the project went on pause. And then I moved to Philadelphia in late 2021. And I was like, I think I should pick this back up again. And it felt like Philly was a good place to nurture it. So I did a lot of research. I had to try to build like a small community around folks to help me because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. And we were lucky enough to get some funding to support the interviews, and the project got a structure. At the end of last year, I found out that the project was accepted at Da Vinci Art Alliance for an exhibition that opens next week, and at Tilt for the exhibition that opened previously in March. And we really wanted an artist who could capture the essence of each of the narratives in somewhat of a complex and layered way. And I think collage is a really interesting way to look at narrative portraiture. And I was introduced to Kara through Veronica Cianfrano. Is that how you say Cianfrano, who's the gallery director at Da Vinci Art Alliance, as well as James Britt, who's the curator director at Tilt, who was familiar with Kara's work. And when they both suggested Kara, like a light bulb went off, and then we kind of met at like the end of like the very last minute, but yeah. Kara was interested and I saw her work, and just Kara's approach to practice and preparation, like Kara sent us like a full deck, like this is my process and this is my previous work and this is what I could do for the project. And I was like, yes, as a project manager, I was like, yeah, bring her on. Yes, love it. And we just worked so well together. And so Kara was able to produce this like, amazing body of work in such a short amount of time that has been so well received by the art community. And we're excited to like, unveil her work for this new iteration next week. And though it'll be up for a shorter run, I just think that what she's been able to do in capturing the stories through like her vision, but integrating aspects of each of the narrator's lives so delicately into her work, just from everything from the colors that she chooses to like the objects that are in it. Like, she did interviews with each of the narrators. The intention and attention to detail is really impeccable. So I'm really glad we were connected in that way.
I really think our meeting and collaborating and working together was just really,
Kismet.
Yes. And it's funny because I think James knew my work because I had applied to be a resident at Tilt at one point. And I didn't get it, which is okay, because that's what happens. As an artist, you apply to stuff, you just don't get it. You keep on keeping on. But when I heard about this project, I was like, this is exactly what I want to do. Because my background is in anthropology. So I went to undergrad and graduate school for it. I graduated from Temple. I've always done art, photography. I got into photography from my father. He was like an avid and amateur photographer. And so I started off on film photography as a teenager. And I just kept doing it off and on. So when I got into anthropology, I went to a special program called the Anthropology of Visual Communication at Temple. It was at the time, it was one of two programs in the country. Wow. It'll almost be 20 years since I graduated. I can't believe it. So I just was like, in addition to being a social scientist, I want to be an artist as well, because it meant something to me. Yeah. And I was trying to figure out ways to integrate both. And I had kind of been working on the periphery for a while, but then when this project came along and Tanya was explaining it's an oral history project, I was like, oh my God, I was in heaven. So I rose to the challenge. It's just the work that I've been wanting to do as an artist for a very long time.
Oh yeah, it's the perfect intersection for both of you.
Yeah.
We know, Tanya, that you curated an upcoming group show of Black Wombhood. Opening on June 5th, but it's much more than just an art exhibition. We did end up wandering the website. You're addressing this wombhood from all angles, and it's truly multidimensional, from oral histories and the podcast to the art exhibition to a digital archive. What component of this came first, and how did you expand on it from there?
So like I mentioned earlier, when I approached my friend Janina, I wanted to do an exhibition. But as someone who had no previous art training or academic curatorial training, I was just like, I don't know what to do. But I did go to grad school, so I'm gonna do some research. So I wanted to see like how the word womb was showing up in the literature, throughout history, in existing artwork, like what people were producing that kind of revolved around like this entity. And so like all this stuff started showing up. Like, I mean, obviously you have the health and medicine aspect of it, but then, you know, you go back enough in history, you have like eugenics and laws around eugenics and like forced sterilization and mean, you think about slavery, like the breeding farms where like this body existed solely to produce slaves. And that, you know, transcends through generations into how we perceive the Black body. Like if you're thinking, oh, this person is promiscuous or, oh, this person is hypersexualized, like there's a reason why all that happens. And right. Connects to the womb. And there were also like womb laws that were like telling Black women what they could not do with their wombs. And then there's certainly how Black bodies have been exploited for like anti-abortion clauses. And there's just so much. It goes on and on and on. So with that kind of dark framework, you know, creating like this cloud around womanhood, I'm like, well, what does it sound like in the contemporary context? I don't know. And I still didn't know that oral history was going to be a part of it until I was talking to a curator, very well known. Her name is Michelle Millar Fisher, and she had done a show here called Designing Motherhood, where they use like the actual design of medical products and like other maternal products and motherhood. And she gave me a lot of advice, and she was like, why don't you do like a supper club and bring people together to talk about womanhood, like what inspired you to do it? And I'm like, okay, so there's like storytelling. And then I'm like, oh, researching how, you know, storytelling formats. And then I ended up on oral history just because it's so rich and relevant. It's like scholarly, but also qualitative, but also accessible. And so I was like, I think I will do oral history, and had to learn how to interview people, what questions were appropriate to ask. Because in addition to just women specifically, it expands gender too. Like I started thinking about, well, you know, all people who have wombs don't identify as women. There's gender nonconforming populations, there's like trans people. So if someone has a womb story and they want to talk about it, what is appropriate and not appropriate to get them to speak about that experience that is still relevant to womanhood? And right. I want womanhood to be this super expansive term. So there was a lot more research I had to do around it, but I'm grateful for the gender studies and queer community for creating, you know, those resources that informed how I should approach it with in a careful manner and a respectful manner, and that made people feel comfortable and trusting this project to talk through their stories. And so the interviews that are on the site are actually oral history vignettes. Oral history is like a long format, like storytelling design. Like you hear all the questions, there's like a long back and forth, you get a full biography that's really centered around like a historical moment in time. But I wanted them to be vignettes because I want people to like come back or want, like mm-hmm. yearn for more. And so with the exhibition, it's a way for people's curiosity hopefully to be piqued by their stories. I don't think that people have to listen to all of the stories before they come. If they haven't, I hope they come and want to hear the stories, but listening to the stories makes the exhibition experience a little bit more rich, wow. I think.
So what should people expect when they experience the exhibition coming up?
Yeah, so this, the second portion of this exhibition is featuring five of the narrators. There are five that were featured in the TILT exhibition, which is up until May 31st, but by the time this comes out, let me just keep going. The theme that we, you know, that we kind of all kind of agreed upon was to really make it feel like a lived-in space. Mm-hmm. As if you're in someone's living room, like a rustic feel to it. Yeah. And also it's an art exhibition. So to have that element of aesthetic in it, so you know that you are actually at a, you know, you're looking at artwork. Right. I'm looking forward to seeing how the portraits will look in the space. Yeah. But we're kind of creating this lived in feeling. So a living room, that's one of the hearts of the home, right?
That was mm-hmm. that one of the narrator's stories mm-hmm. about her sharing the Color Girl Museum mm-hmm. that she, up in Germantown, where the living room was such a center mm-hmm. for growing up on like sharing your stories and sharing your family and sharing all of that.
It was Tanya's concept that kind of, you know, for this direction of this iteration of the exhibition. And then there'll also be sound. There's a soundscape that's going to accompany it that JL Simonson?
Yeah, shout out the third artist.
Oh, yes, who are the collaborators?
When I tell you that this team is great because it's so multi-layered and we all have like expertise in these mm-hmm. different fields, but they really connect mm-hmm. and intersect with one another well. JL uses their sound as like a collage artist as well. So it's going to be multi-layered. I believe that it's going to be welcoming. And I really hope that those who visit the exhibition, you know, will establish some empathy, right? Mm-hmm. Connect with some of the narrators, maybe also reflect on their own personal stories and experiences, if they have wounds or if not, you know, I'm sure that they know someone. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I had a great time developing the artwork for this. I'm using instant film, you know, definitely collage, archival photos and materials. There are going to be photo albums that people can flip through. Oh, wow. Just like at, you know, at Tilt, there's going to be a process wall where I photograph various stages of my art practice. It helps me, as you know, to understand what I'm creating and also serves as a document. And so there'll be a photo, a process wall, mm-hmm. where you'll literally see like the photographs that I took while I was constructing these collages. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to piggyback off of Kara in terms of what I want people to feel. When she said empathy, like that was always something from the start. And from an accessibility standpoint, I wanted people to be able to either see, hear and or feel the project. So we have the visual aspect which Kara provides, and then the sonic element which JL designed, and JL used excerpts from each of the narrator's interviews in addition to like other ambient and resonant aspects to just create this dreamscape. Mm-hmm. So that's where you come in and you can kind of sit in this living room setting in here. And to the extent we could, I wanted there to be like a textural aspect to it, because when I think of Wombhood and listen to the stories, there's a lot of texture from like each person's voice is their own kind of like identity coming into it, as well as like the breadth of identities. You probably feel color, emotion when you're listening to different ones, as you alluded to earlier. Yeah. So that's textural in my opinion. So we have some textiles in there as well, from like the type of rug to the fabric on the chair to the curtain that we may or may not use. I don't know. But, it should be a multi-sensory experience. If people aren't able to like hear everything, we want to direct them to the site so that they can listen to the episodes and hopefully realize that womb doesn't just mean, you know, one thing. Mm-hmm. It can mean different things, and it means something to each person who is a part of this project, whether they're a narrator or an artist or another collaborator.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think a lot of visitors will come out with questions of themselves and of the womb that they came from, mm-hmm. as well.
Right. That's something we all share, right?
Yes.
It's all
exactly.
First home.
Yeah, it is.
Correct. I have questions from my mom. I already do. Yeah. like, did they listen to you if you mm-hmm. had gone through a trauma or not during that time? And what support were you given? So many of the stories were like, we weren't even educated, mm-hmm. and we were thrust into this situation mm-hmm. of you know, the usage of our womb, and that was I think a lot of the visitors will come out with more questions than mm-hmm. not, which is good.
So.
It continues to help ripple out the art. Mm-hmm. Even beyond the four walls of the exhibition.
We'll throw it into the universe. We need all of that.
Love it. So where can people find you both online and in real life?
Online, you can visit my website, karamshinda.com. I'm also on Instagram. The work will be up at DaVinci Art Alliance for the month of June, June 5th to the 22nd. I also have a show coming up, and I'm really horrible. I don't have the dates.
That's
but
okay.
It'll be at the 2020 House in Lansdowne later in the fall. It's a group exhibition where we'll be featuring aspects of the city and urban spaces.
Oh,
and so I'm doing photography mostly in collage, and there's some painters, and then there's some installation artists. I have a studio at Cherry Street Pier, which is off of Columbus Boulevard. Anytime you're down there at Cherry Street, feel free to stop by. It's called Griot Arts, and it's Studio 3. And we're going to be having workshops throughout the summer.
And you can follow Of Black Wombhood on Instagram at Of Black Wombhood. and also the project website, which is theblackwombhoodproject.com. That's a mouthful, but it's linked on the website as well. Yeah, we'll be updating. And also DaVinci will be hosting a workshop, create your own oral history workshop that J.L. Simonson, who's the sound artist, is facilitating. And that's on the 21st at 2 p.m. at DaVinci Art Alliance. So if folks are interested, they can go to DaVinci's website and there's a registration link to Eventbrite where they can sign up.
And we'll include the link to that in the show notes.
Thank you.
Excellent. We're going to close out with some rapid fire questions. Mm-hmm. If you could describe the Philadelphia art scene in one word.
I'll say underfunded. Fund us. Fund us.
Love that.
Give us the money.
Yes.
I'm going to say real. This is a city of working artists who are real. Forget all that pretension. Yep. Folks are out here just grinding, doing their thing. And that's what I love about it. That's what I love about Philly. Yeah.
Cheesesteaks, with whiz or without?
I'm going to say without, just because my stomach is weird today.
Yeah. I'm going to say without as well.
All right. Yeah. Perfect. Which piece of art, any art, would you have in your home if you could? No limitations.
I just saw the John Sargent exhibit at the Met, which was incredible, and I didn't know like how he's light in his work. Yes. But if I had unlimited income, he has a piece, I don't remember what it's called, but he had a woman come in, and she, I think when he went to Morocco, it's like the woman standing over like a perfume, like an incense container, and just like the light elements, the details of like the rug, and I'm struggling to remember the name. I saw it and it was like such a stunning piece. I think that would go with any decor, at least in my home.
Perfect.
That's what I would choose.
It would have to be Monet, one of the water lily paintings.
Beautiful.
I cried. I was in Chicago and I went to the Art Institute and saw it in person. I had never seen one in person, only in a book. And I don't know why, but it just floored me.
Yes.
Because Impressionist art eats.
It does. So I would have to say that. And so there's so many, but yeah.
It's a beautiful period. Great choices. Mm-hmm. Great choices. Is there a Philadelphia-based artist that people are sleeping on?
I don't think she's slept on, but I just love her work because it's so multidimensional. Colette Fu, who does these pop-up sculptural pieces. They're incredible. And if you haven't had a chance to like see it in person, it's truly something masterful. Like the craft behind these large paper sculptures that, if you ever had somebody give you like a pop-up card for your birthday, these are like human scale. Like
Intricate.
She's Philly-based, but she's shown like at Grounds for Sculpture. Mm-hmm. Like she's all over the place. Also a fellow Leeway grantee. Check her out if you haven't. She's probably booked and busy right now.
I'm going to link her stuff too.
Yeah, she's incredible.
That's a hard one. I know so many wonderful artists. We all should like have, you know, get Guggenheim. We should all be funded, but like I'm trying to think.
Don't sleep on Kara either.
You can self-promote Kara. That's perfectly fine.
Don't sleep on Kara.
I have a dream to like show it. Like, I would
love that.
I would love to show it at a museum one day in my life. So I'm putting that out there.
All right. Love it. All right, Tanya, this is specifically for you. Who or which brand makes the best turtleneck?
Okay, I'm going to go high-low. And high is relative, but I would say for high, Commando. Just the seamless fit is like so good. And then accessible, there's this brand called Marcella NYC, which I'm like obsessed with. And they have
got
like
a jacket from them.
I just love the little cutouts in the it's like you can get a regular turtleneck with a little shouldered, you know, razzle dazzle. So yeah.
I just bought a sleeveless shirt from there. It's a stand-up turtleneck.
Oh, okay.
It's like a woven.
Oh, is it like the exaggerated? Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I would say Marcella and Commando.
And Kara, this one's for you.
Okay.
If you could pick one of your accessible mediums, so either your freehand drawing, collage, or lo-fi photography, which one would you pick?
Oh, wow.
No pressure.
No pressure. I'm going to say drawing because I don't show a lot of my drawings. So That's the most personal work that I would have to say. That's the most like uniquely Kara type of artwork that I do is my freehand drawings. Excellent. Yeah.
It's really good too. I think you have some on your Instagram you posted.
Oh yeah. I draw on people's faces.
Yeah. Don't sleep on Kara.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for your time today. It's been absolutely wonderful. And everyone, please check out Da Vinci Art Alliance and Of Black Wombhood Project that it will open on June 5th.
Before we talk about what we're doing this weekend, can I just say wow?
Yeah.
I could have listened to Tanya and Kara for beyond our studio time.
Oh, yes.
And I burned through all of the interviews, and they're just so moving, and those profiled shared with such vulnerability. I will definitely be going to the exhibit on Saturday. You know what I'm excited about? I'm really excited to see how that space is transformed from gallery to the lived-in, rustic space that they're talking about in our conversation. And it sounds like it's going to be very experiential.
Yeah. I mean, every listener should really take the time to listen to some of those episodes. Mm-hmm. They were truly moving and eye-opening.
Was it really eye-opening as a man?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Same. Before going to the Da Vinci Art Alliance Saturday, I actually have plans to make it to Muse Gallery to see the Jean Plow exhibit.
Oh,
I think
great.
It's Jean Plow, not Jean. It's called Figure/Ground, and probably bringing Petit Garçon with me.
Nice.
We'll go after French. And Small Ball opens on Friday, and my family will be there.
Nice.
Supporting the PTC. Are you getting into anything? Are you taking a weekend off?
I might take the weekend off. I might also check out some art on Sunday because I'll be in the city.
Oh, are you going to the Rittenhouse Fine Art?
Oh, yes. That Rittenhouse Fine Art Fair is this weekend. It's absolutely incredible every year. And hopefully the weather is also incredible. It's usually a great time to see some great pieces. Uh-huh. And if that is out of people's price range, the following weekend is the Art for the Cash Poor. That'll be taking place Saturday, June 14th from 12 to 6. And there'll be more than 100 local artists offering their artwork for $250 or less.
Accessible.
Yes, totally. And that'll be in like South Kensington area.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
And then the Fine Art Fair is in Rittenhouse Square.
Correct.
Robert.
Yes.
Here's my question for you. Will you be bringing a U-Haul with you?
Potentially. I will also be running out of wall space. Indefinitely.
Let's talk about what else is up for this weekend. If you are not going to see Small Ball on Friday, and you absolutely should catch it during its run, Old City First Friday is this Friday. Also, John Poblador, Chapel of Color, opened yesterday as of this episode drop at Bridget Meyer Gallery. Cynthia Paredes, By My Side or Back of Me, is ongoing at the Print Center until July 19th. The Chris RWK Show is ongoing at Works on Paper Gallery, and this is the last weekend. Let's be honest, it's probably sold out by now.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure Terra Bodies and Territories is on your calendar for either weekend, and that's going to be June 13th, 14th, 15th, and 20th, 21st, and 22nd. I'm thinking about buying tickets for Father's Day.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. Bring it on home, Robert.
Also, there's tickets to Ballet X's summer series that are on sale for July 16th through the 20th, but the company also has their June 5th stop at Longwood Gardens and will be popping up June 12th at Dilworth Park. As always, Philly has heart.
And art.
us to also like immerse ourselves more into the arts community.
I was gonna ask, do you visit all the places?
We try to.
Yeah.
Lucinda does an amazing job of like checking out all the galleries and checking in over the weekend and seeing
I'm also in the city, and he lives in Ardmore, so that's fair.
It's a little harder. It's a little harder for me.
There's a gallery down the street that it makes sense for me to stop in during my lunch break, and how lucky to do that.
Yeah.